All right. Well, it's good to see you all.
Good seeing you.
Anyone would like to start with something? Anyone got any questions they want to start with? Ooh, everyone's gone quiet now. It's like, oh, okay. Everyone was chatting and now everyone's silent. Oh, here we go. Okay. Who'd like to share something or ask something?
Yeah, I'm always talking, so I'm trying to defer.
Well.
Well, I'll ask one if nobody else is going to step up.
Okay.
Tell me the difference and compare, where Ian's teachings, and I know you've talked about it, the bench of three or the Beit Din. How does that, and then in the New Testament, you've got the, I mean, for years we've been functioning with elders and deacons. So, and the fivefold ministry. So, how does the Beit Din or bench of three compare with, like, your elders and the deacons that function in the church? They were the, well, for us, we have three elders. So basically, they are a bench of three. But so, what's the difference? And what's the difference in function and all of that? Because, I mean, even with that, it was based on a relationship, for me anyway,
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, the difference is in the nature of the governmental order of it. In that, in a sense, you can call them elders or anything you want to call them. In a sense, the Bible obviously uses that Paul appointed elders in each place, and that was a word that. Was a word for respect. Obviously, it didn't mean that they necessarily had to be old, but that it was shown as a sign of maturity or respect. And obviously, you wouldn't want someone who was operating in a governmental role who didn't have that maturity or respect. And of course, it was described as what are the characteristics and the character of those people that would need to be for them to function in that sort of role. And I think that's just a sort of a basic explanation of the character of people in leadership in general. You had in the early church, you had the 12 apostles who operated in government over the first church, and you had within those 12 apostles three who Jesus had as his inner circle, if you like, who were their bench of three for that 12. So Peter, James, and John initially, until they then began to go out from that place, and you had James, who also was involved in that when it came to Acts 15, I think, when they start talking about deciding legislative decrees. Now at that point, I think they were still operating very much in this interim transitional period, because it wasn't until Peter had the vision of the sheep coming down with the animals that they basically took on the revelation that this was for everybody and not just for the Jews. So they needed that sort of impetus to shift from Jerusalem to Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. And it actually wasn't until persecution came that they really actually were forced out, because they didn't want to, basically, I think. But others were sent out. Paul was obviously sent out with that message. So in Acts, you also have the issue of deacons, who were the seven who were filled with the Holy Spirit, who were to administrate, and they would be classed as the bench of seven within a church setup. So you have the bench of three, who would be classed as elders, and then you have the bench of seven, who would be the deacons. When you go back to the original Hebrew kahal, you needed 10 to form a house. So you had to have 10, what they called house officers, to establish an ecclesia. And that's really then what happened when Paul went around. he began to appoint elders, and then the elders in each area or city or ecclesia began then to appoint the deacons, who were the bench of seven. And that bench of seven would have the angel of the house, who was the one who carried the apostolic vision from the three to ensure that the seven outworked it according to heavenly government rather than earthly. Because there's always a temptation for pastoral people to administer earthly rather than heavenly, and that's where we had the whole challenge between pastoral and apostolic. And, you know, the foundations of the church were apostolic and prophetic until Constantine decided to merge state and church together, and he decided that he would appoint old priests so they wouldn't be out of jobs in a new position, and therefore that's when the whole thing started to seriously go downhill. Before that, it was still... Now, you had sort of bishops and things like that that were regional people who operated in regional benches, let's say. And there, some of the terms were synonymous because they were using different terms to represent different forms of government. But we get all sorts of denominational systems like Episcopalian and all those type of things that have come out of those different terms, simply because someone used elder, someone used bishop, and they used those terms to set. And we have different forms of church government, all based on a particular term. When if you look in Peter, they were really synonymous for the same thing, those who brought government. But the main issue was they did it as foundations, not as those that ruled over people. And that, I think, is the major issue what we're looking at now. When we're looking at, well, what is a new order government? It is one which reflects a blueprint from heaven that operates as a foundational, apostolic, prophetic, governmental foundation for people to be released into their destiny, into the blueprint that would be established by that shadow, if you like, that reflected on earth. And it is very difficult for people to understand the heavenly aspect of this unless they are actually operating beyond the veil. Because even the apostolic and prophetic, we're not talking about the fivefold ministry. We're talking about those who carry apostolic, heavenly, and prophetic government and bringing the word out of heaven and the government out of heaven so that it can be established in that way on the earth. I think the fivefold ministry was given for equipping the saints for service, not to rule over it or govern it. They were ministry gifts to the body to equip the body. And of course, everyone, you know, has taken the issue of apostle, prophet. Well, they don't exist anymore because that's in the early church, because that's what dispensational teaching taught. So the only prophetic and apostolic foundations can be that which was set in the very beginning. Well, that obviously isn't true, but that's how church government has been established. And then it talks about shepherds, and that word has been translated in later versions as pastors. And now pastors rule churches and govern churches, where pastors were supposed to equip the people to be pastoral, to shepherd each other, to care for each other. Simple. Never supposed to be in government at all, independently. And all those ministries were actually there to equip the whole body to be apostolic, prophetic, pastoral, evangelistic, and to teach, and to be those who brought the oracles of God. They were never supposed to be governmental as they have been set up. Now, as they've been restored to the church, because obviously a lot of that revelation was lost until, you know, you get restoration of that, you know, in the sort of 14th, 15th, 16th, up to the 20th century. And each one of those sort of restorations restored a truth, an aspect of that truth, back to the body at large. And at various points in history, there was a focus on that, The problem is, when the next move came that brought in another revelation, they didn't embrace it and therefore pass the baton on to that next move so that the next move could take what the last move had and then advance it. They opposed it in general, so the next truth opposed the last truth, and therefore the first truth set up a denomination, and then the next truth set up another denomination, rather than embracing the whole of it, and so that we will fully be equipped in the fivefold aspects of that truth. Now, I believe that, you know, and this is what Ian Clayton teaches, that up until 2012, there was all those orders were there and had been restored so that the church could be fully representing heaven on earth. But because most of those ministries haven't really equipped the body but have replaced the body, and that's, I'm not saying all of them, but in general, you know, apostles are set apart from everybody else rather than equipping everybody else to be apostolic. And therefore, they're the apostles and they do the apostling for the body rather than equipping everyone to be apostles or to be apostolic in their outlook and viewpoint and carrying the heart of God. And so they've essentially set up mountains that they're on top of. And you see in the different flavors, you know, from the 80s sort of onwards, you had the prophets were the main ones who were on top of the tree. And then when all of a sudden they started changing their names to be called themselves apostles, when that was revelation was brought back to the church, you know, and so it's a bit of a mess, you know. So I think God is basically saying we need to establish a new order which is based on a royal priesthood who function in heaven and establish governmental blueprints from heaven onto earth so that we can live under the government of heaven on the earth, not under the government of earth. So anything that's calling themselves ministries which provide coverings for people, groups of people, is just old order. We don't provide any covering for anybody. God does that. We provide a foundation in which we release, equip, and help them, everybody, come into their individual destinies within the purposes of God. And therefore, it's all about releasing people, equipping people into those things. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't some gifts that that we have within the body to operate that way. They are the earthly functions to help us operate in walking in His ways in this realm. In the realm of heaven, you have a whole different set of functions. So you have priest, king, oracles, legislators, and scribes, and they represent the fivefold expression in the heavenly realms, which is different from the earthly. Now, most people haven't sort of got into that yet, but some, I know some people have called to some of those. They've been engaging in scribing and being in scribeship things in the realms of heaven. Some of them, a lot of legislation beginning to take place in the realms of heaven. A lot of people who are bringing the mysteries of God and the oracles of the eternal oracles of God, following those ancient pathways into today. So, you know, they are starting to begin to function now. But it's very different from what has been. And I can smell what has been and sniff it out, because it just, you know, it's like where the river of life goes, it brings life and it turns salt water to fresh. But in the transition, you often have a mixture of fresh and salt water, and it's brackish is the technical term for it, I think, and that doesn't taste very good, you know. And so we need fresh water, and unfortunately a lot of people are taking some of the new wine and they're trying to put it in old wineskins. So they're taking some new terms like going to the courts and setting up benches of three, but all they're actually doing is trying to do things in the old wineskin with new names, because that's the flavor of the day. And they're still functioning in the same way. We sit on top of the mountain and we tell people what to do, rather than, no, we're in the dirt and people can stand on us and we release them and support them. Different type of ethos. And, you know, and I can, you know, it doesn't take me very long to find out where people are from just what they share and how they're talking. And, You know, and I have that here, you know, because you use the same language with people, but they have a different framework and grid of reference for what you're saying, and they interpret it in a way which is old. Even though they've heard the words, they still have an old interpretation of what it is. And that's quite difficult, you know, because you're trying to communicate using words that you both have different meanings for.
I have a question that sort of ties into this. Supposedly, on February 28th, we entered into a new cycle, which was the Days of Judgment, and there was a little thing online talking about how an angel assigned to the original 70 nations stands before the rest, and when we were praying, my husband and I, we entered into the court. We saw the throne and things, and I didn't know it. You know, is there some special interaction during this time, or some special interaction that we can do in interceding for the nations, or your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is a really. I'm getting a lot of questions about this right now, and some of. I'm only going to share from my personal revelation and experience. I know certain people are saying certain things about 71st nations, and they're saying, well, Israel is the first nation. To me, I've got to be honest, it's nonsense. Because Israel didn't even exist as a nation when there were other nations. And I think it's sort of been come about because there are 70 on the Galactic Council, and therefore what do they represent? And, you know, and again, I've heard teaching that, oh, there are people who are called to that Galactic Council, but they're not functioning because they don't know that they're called, and they're none of that just gives resonance with me whatsoever. When I've been there, and I have been there, it's been a bench with the thrones with the Father and 70, you know, of these galactic council who are in this horseshoe that we engage with. Now, I don't think you can just go and engage with a galactic council. I mean, if you've never been into a court of the mobile court, or you've not been in the court of chancellors, or you don't know the protocols, I think God may be calling people to observe to see, hey, this is something that's there. But you have to understand and then search the protocols for producing a case to go before the Galactic Council. And it's not... I mean, I've been there. First time I went there, it was so bright, because it's not in the realm of heaven. It's in the realm of the heaven of heavens. And so it's so bright, I couldn't even see it. So the atmosphere is different. But I eventually, you know, sort of tuned into it and, you know, observed what was going on. And yes, there is 70 days of judgment, but we need to really understand what judgment is. It's not so that we can go there and get punishment poured out on the earth. Jesus made it very clear to James and John, who were, you know, the sons of thunder, that as they were called, that we were not going to call down fire from heaven onto this village. Because that's what they said, shall we call down fire from heaven because they've rejected you? And he was like, come on, guys, have you not got this yet? You know, we're not here to bring down the fire of God's judgment. We are here, yes, to have fire, but that fire is a totally different fire. It's something we can go through and come into by going through the fire into the kingdom, you know, and how can I put it? There are people who are talking about engaging the Galactic Council who aren't even on their own mountain. And they're talking about engaging the Galactic Council when they've never even done a court case in the mobile court. And I think part of the problem is new things get put out there and people just jump on the bandwagon and say, oh yeah, we're going to go to the Galactic Council. Now, if God mandates you to go, absolutely fine, but you really need to understand. Now, Ian Clayton is teaching that you have to engage all the 12 houses to fully understand the nature of the Galactic Council, and I totally accept that. I mean, I'm working on the 12 houses and what they do in terms of government and alignment of government. If you're called there, I believe you can go. And if you're called with a mandate, I believe that you can go and present that mandate. Even if you don't have all the other revelation, if you're called, you can go. But when you go, you need to understand a little bit about how you present a case. So if you go and you observe something going on and you've learned, hey, this is what they're doing, I also totally, in my personal experience of going there, there should be 70 of our generation called to that level of government who will serve the purpose of God in our generation. There aren't 70 people from our generation who are there. So there, when I've been and looked, I've seen them made up of some of the men in white linen, some of the ancient hooded ones, some people from this generation, and some assigned angelic order of chancellors who are there in representation, because we've not matured enough yet to have 70 people there, which in some senses is sad, but on the other sense is we're on a journey, and I'm sure that within a shortish period of time, there will be people who are called and appointed and know how to access the Galactic Council and take their seat so that they can administer judgment, justice, mercy, and well, grace and mercy. So if you're going to present a case, you need a mandate for the case, and then to present the case, you need to understand the precepts, statutes, and laws of God, which give you the framework on which that case is to be brought. Then you need to know, and that is from what was, then you need to know what it is now that you're coming to bring judgment into. So what are the present legal rights that there is, that the enemy has effectively, to cause the things you want to see changed, challenged? And so you have to have a case. You know, what is the case for this change, for judgment to be brought in this, so that the verdict can be passed, which is this what we're talking about. Judgment is making a verdict. It's actually saying yes or no. And there are things which the enemy has legal rights. Unless we remove those legal rights, we can only limit and not stop. And so I've heard Ian Clayton talk about, and others, that some of the Galactic Council and the judgments are made are to put limits on what the enemy can do, but cannot restrict it. And you have precedent for that, in that when Satan approached God in the court about Job, God said, yes, you can do this, but you cannot kill him. So there was a limit on what the enemy could do. The same was when Satan went before the court with Peter and were asked to sift Peter on the basis of Peter's behavior, fear, and what he did in rejection. That then Jesus said, he didn't say, I'm stopping the enemy from doing anything, Peter, but he is saying is, I am praying that your faith will not fail. So I'm advocating that the enemy can only go so far. So there are things that we need to deal with legally if we're going to fully change things. And unless you know what the legal rights of the enemy is in any situation, then there's going to be a limit to what the judgments can be made. So some of the spiritual mapping and all that stuff that went on in the 80s and 90s and onwards can become in very useful now, because we can find out what some of the legal rights the enemy has and we can deal with them. But the problem is they try to deal with them from below in this realm. We need to go above and deal with them in a higher level court, remove the legal rights, and then we can actually start to see change. Because the third aspect of what you need to bring in a court case is, what are we looking to see changed? What are we looking to see that will come into being? So what was, what is, and what will be. And so you're bringing out of the revelation of what was, God's eternal precepts, statutes, and laws, to bring that into what is going on right now that we need to see changed, and then what do we want it to be changed into? So what are the changes in the affairs of the nations? What are the changes in culture? What are the changes that are going to take place as a result of this bringing this case before the Galactic Council so that they can adjudicate and pass verdict and give us authorization to see those changes take place. Now, there may be many different sorts of cases in which we bring that are different, and so we have to be very clear what mandate we've been given and then only use that mandate to produce a case. But I'm not sure that many people really are in a place to do that right now. You know, is there's a sense of, you know, that is having charge of the courts. Well, unless you are operating in the principles of the kingdom as a lord and you're beginning to understand legislation as a king, you're never going to stand in the assemblies of God, which is what we're talking about, as a son. So we've got to be willing to mature into sonship and learn how the kingdom functions so that we can begin to do this. I am working on a case right now for the Galactic Council, and I'm working that through with wisdom and gaining some understanding. And you know, when I've done that case, and I will report back to, you know, and help people from that perspective. You know, this is a case to deal with judgment, so that something can be changed and released. But I would never do it without being mandated. And God gave me a specific mandate and told me to do it. And then I needed to go and find out how to do it. And I've been doing that over the last few weeks. But I've got, you know, still got 60-odd days of that court in session to make sure I've got the court case, you know, right. You know, because I don't want to go there, you know, without the prophetic declarations that have been released, because you bring prophetic words to this is what has been prophesied, this is God's will for this, and actually it doesn't look like that. So then you can, you know, in a sense, what we're looking at is we need to see things called as if they were, even though they aren't. You know, Romans 4:17, I think, God calls things that be not as if they are. So we have to challenge what is and begin to call for what will be, and that comes out of the destiny of a blueprint. You know, you have to have a blueprint to be able to say this is not in alignment with the blueprint. So what is the blueprint for the ecclesia that you might be in, for the city, for the region, for the state, the nation? What is the blueprint? Because that is what is going to give you, this is what it should look like, and it doesn't. So how do we change what it should be look like? Now, it may be that some of the cases that people are bringing are to limit the enemy's activity. And without the Galactic Council in session in this way, the enemy would have destroyed the planet by now. It's only because they have had authority to limit what the enemy is doing that it hasn't happened. And in a reality, is, I mean, if you think of all the terrorism and all the stuff in the world and all the stuff that they could get their hands on in terms of nuclear stuff and everything else, it's like it is only by the authority of that council and people, you know, interceding and beginning to bring government and legislation that hasn't happened. Because it makes no sense that it hasn't happened, because you can think of the mad people that are out there, but the enemy is limited in what he can do because they set the limits. So there is limits, and those are set by God's blueprint for the planet. No one is going to blow this planet up when God's blueprint for this planet is that it is the center of the government of the universe. It isn't going to happen. You know, I'm not saying there aren't things that do happen, but there are limits that the enemy cannot destroy the purposes of God. What he can do is obviously destroy people's lives if they do not come into a relationship with Jesus. And he can affect the culture of a city or a region because of sin, unless we deal with that sin judicially and begin to administer judgment into the situations, which is why we got to be operating beyond the veil in judicial government. But everyone's got different authority spheres to do that in. You know, I wouldn't do that over something that I'm not authorized to do. I know I can do it over the church here. The government here, because I'm part of the bench. I can do that for my town because I've been authorized and part of a bench. I can do it for my region. I can't do it for our nation as yet. Although I have seen the pattern of government that needs to be established for our nation, which, you know, I have some things I can do in terms of calling people forth into government and out of heaven releasing sounds that will draw people into government in the future. And all of us will have different dimensions of authority that we can operate in. But so, yeah, I've heard a lot about this recently. And I'm only really going to teach what I know from experience, not what other people are saying, because I've not seen that. You know, and I don't believe that there are 70 First Nations. What about the 190 nations or 200 nations that are on the earth? Have we got no legislation towards them? You know, that may have been 70 First Nations at one stage, but there are a lot more now. And certainly what some people are saying about those, just I don't resonate with, so I'm just going to put on the back burner. If God wants to show me something real, change about that and give me revelation in the future, then I'm open for that. I just don't have it at the moment, and you know, I just don't resonate with certain things that are being said right now. But who knows? I'm not saying those people aren't right. I'm just saying it's certainly not in my revelation, and therefore I'm not gonna try and teach something that someone else is saying.
Mike, can I ask you, in this court, is there a huge gallery to view, like this huge seating kind of gallery?
There is a gallery in all the courts where we can observe and see what goes on. You know, but the different courts, you know, all appear different. So some of them. The problem with me is when I go into a setting like that, I just focus on getting on and doing what I'm supposed to do. I don't tend to look too much at, well, where am I, what's going on? Because my spirit knows where it is. And when I'm taken there, particularly by wisdom or, you know, which I have been in various courts and introduced to it, you know, I'm not really looking that hard at what it looks like. And to be honest, it may well appear differently because we're all wired differently and God wants to communicate something through the experience, you know, that this is a level of governmental authority. And, you know, whether we all see exactly the same, I don't know. You know, my experience is that we all see things slightly differently, but what they represent is the same, you know, because we are all different, you know, and we all have all, I mean, for instance, if we were to use, there's a difference between engaging in a vision, in seeing something that the symbolism relates to us in a way which we understand something, than being there in a trance and being there soul and spirit, or being translated there body, soul, and spirit, which, you know, obviously Enoch and Elijah certainly were. And there may well have been others. Well, they were the original ancient ones who have been translated their body, soul, spirit. But I would suggest if most people went their body, soul, and spirit, they may not come back. So I go there sometimes spirit and soul, because I'm taken there in that very first person, suspended from this realm to engage that realm. Majority of the times I'm going there in my spirit, and my spirit is knowing and perceiving and understanding where I am, what I'm doing, and what's going on. But I'm much more about the function rather than the form. So I'm not really a very good one to ask when it comes to how things look, because I'm not that bothered. I just want to know how to operate in it. Because I want to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm not really worried whether it's got a gallery or not a gallery. But I have been in a gallery initially when I went to observe. Now, you know, what does that really mean? Does that really mean just there's a place that we can go to observe something to get an understanding of it? Yeah. You know, I think that's what it really means. That God can take us or we can go, and therefore we're not going to be in the way. Because, you know, I don't want to go before one of these courts and operate inappropriately or out of jurisdiction. You know, I don't want to be in contempt of court. Now, you know, God is fine with us learning, and, you know, he's okay with us, you know, not understanding everything and whatever. But if I'm going to present a case, I don't want to go having not been prepared. That would be my take on it. So, yeah.
Yeah, he is inviting you to come and watch and learn. He is inviting you to come and watch and learn. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been one who always argued when I got, you know, take more authority, give you more responsibility, I always argued with that. So, from a repentant heart, he began to deal with me, and he said, it's okay, because you wrestle with me. Mm-hmm. And he said, if you're going to wrestle with me, why not wrestle with me? And not let.
Yeah.
And it changed. And
awesome.
I got to see a little more of the school after that encounter. And I know there's support here, but I don't not necessarily lack of it. But there is another that deals with things like diseases on mankind. You know, I don't know if it's over regions or what, but some of these things that are playing havoc with mankind. And I heard the term Regency Court. I know we all hear this too, have different language. Have you ever heard of this particular court?
So what is it? What is it?
I've heard of Regency Court.
Regency Court, okay. I personally feel that many of the different titles for courts are more to do with what's going on in the court rather than what the court is. So to me, when you convene the mobile court, you're convening a court for whatever purpose that you've been authorized to do so. And that might be a regional purpose, it might be a national purpose. So it's like a courtroom is a courtroom. That courtroom can house a court which is with jury and judge. It could hold a civil case for where you get two cases, what is it called? Litigation, you know, and that goes on in the same room, but the function of what's happening is different. So you may have different things that go on in the courtroom because you're convening it for that purpose, but it's actually the same. It's the same thing. It's a court that's being convened for a purpose. It's just what you do in it. And so if you're dealing with an accusation personally, that would be a function for that courtroom. If you're dealing with something, you know, as an ecclesia, that would be something. You know, the process is essentially similar, but what goes on there would be slightly different. And there may well be different proceedings that we get to be involved in depending on what we've been authorized to deal with or our mandate to deal with it. And some of them will definitely be regional in the authority that they carry. But that's not the fact that the court is regional. It's the fact that you are regional because you have authority to bring that regional issue before the court. And, you know, some of those may be national issues, and it's depending on the sphere of government that authorizes you to operate there or in a direct mandate you've been given. Because sometimes you can operate outside of your sphere if you've been given a direct mandate. Because God is looking for people who are willing, and sometimes there are people who should be doing things that aren't. And therefore he'll look for someone who is willing, even though they may not be their direct authorized area, but they can operate there because of a direct mandate from God. You know, and I've done that. in certain things in certain places, but only in agreement. You know, when I go to another nation or I go to another, I need agreement with the people I'm going to operate on their behalf. I would never presume, even if I've been mandated to do something, you need agreement between heaven and earth. You know, and I'll always ask for that. You know, can we come into agreement for this that God has shown? Because I think that shows respect. You know, and I think we need to respect the different places of authority, you know, that there are. You know, and I'm certainly sensitive to some of that. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, I've heard many people use many terms, but I think it's all the same basic thing. There is a court, you know. Now, there obviously are other courts, like the Court of Chancellors, like the Court of Angels. You know, there are different courts, and there are different things that operate in those courts. But I can't convene, well, I don't think I can. Well, I suppose I could, because I, in a role as a chancellor, I could convene a chancellor's court. But I, you know, I would not convene some of the courts because they are a higher level above my pay grade, if you like. You know, but they are convenable, and you can go and to them, and you can present a case there. But it's not the same as dealing with accusations and dealing with issues of legislation in terms of. Legal rights and those sorts of things. You know, they're much more about judicial protocol and having sealed scrolls and mandates and things like that. You know, when you go before the Court of Angels, you're looking to present something to that court for their participation. You know, and there's biblical precedent for that, where God had the assembly of the angels, and he was saying, okay, we're going to deal with this Ahab guy. Who's going? And one volunteered. Yeah, I'll go. And so in the Court of Angels, they recognize our governmental authority, and they will respond. And some of them will be assigned to that. And the same with the Court of the Upright. Some of the men in white linen are specifically assigned to particular people, gifts, blueprints, because they recognize something that resonates with theirs, and they want to participate in the full out working of that. You know, for us to learn, there's a lot more for us to learn, and I think we're just beginning to start to understand some of the protocols. But the more we continue to proceed and learn, the greater that we will have authority, because, you know, according to Zechariah 3, 6 and 7, we should have charge of the courts, you know, and charge of the house. So, you know, that's something which is our destiny, but we have to learn and mature in that process, you know, which is why, you know, I do get somewhat concerned when I hear people talking about, well, they're going to go to this court and they're going to do that, when they're not even on their own mountain and they're not even governing their own life. You know, we need to be administering the kingdom in our own circle, in our own mountains, before we go and think about doing it somewhere else. You know, because actually, if we're not faithful with little, why do we expect that we're going to be given faithfulness in much? And so it's like, well, I can't really be bothered with dealing with my stuff. I just want to deal with the nation. It's not going to work like that. You know, God is not going to release authority to deal with a nation when we can't even govern our own family, you know, or our own church setting. You know, it's very much going to be a progression of maturity and a willingness to embrace transformation in that process of maturity. You know. But you do hear a lot of people talking about a lot of things which I think they may well be picking up secondhand from other people's teaching and then trying to make it their own, and I'm not convinced by that. You know, I'll teach what I know and what I've experienced and what I'm authorized to do. I don't want to rehash someone else's. You know, sometimes I will share someone else's and say, this is really excellent. You'd be great to listen to this. This will bring you revelation. You know, sometimes I'll share people's prophetic words because it's like, wow, this is a word that comes out of heaven. This is awesome. Let's listen to this. You know, but I want to operate out of the revelation I've personally got, because then you have authority in it.
What do you influence when it seems that you're assigned a particular scribe? I mean, the same scribe, every time you're there, it's the same scribe that you encounter. Is that it?
Well, I mean, you obviously have the court of scribes, and there are scribes in there that write everything into record. So everything about our scroll is there. Whether it's wood, hay, and stubble, or gold, silver, and precious stones, it's all scribed onto our scroll. There is the record of everyone's life that is scribed. But there's also legislation that is brought into law by the scribes writing it into record. And therefore we get to do that. And some people, there are three functions that work together closely. When we're talking about government, we're talking about the oracles and the scribes and the legislators. And they work together in bringing the oracles of God out of what is to legislate into, well, what was, to legislate into what is, to begin to call that which will be. And I think those three functions I've seen working closely together. And I know I've talked to people who just feel the whole name of scribe and, you know, what they're doing in writing things in the realms of heaven is something that they do. You know, some of them are like, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing right now, but I know I'm doing something and I feel called to this, and there's something about the name scribe which I resonate with. Which is key. You know, I personally resonate much more with the whole thing of legislator at this point. Again, people may use the term, but it has slightly different meanings depending on where they're coming from. You know, and a lot of people would be writing things now in this dimension, but that's not really what we're talking about. We're not talking about writing books or, you know, writing blog posts and all that sort of stuff. We're really talking about actually writing the oracles in the realms of heaven so that then they can be brought into decrees and released. So it's writing decrees out of the precepts of God that then can be legislated and brought into being. Effectively, I don't know enough to know how much every individual will have in their roles to play. I know that there are different roles to play. Is everyone going to be called one of those? Is everyone going to be called the Chancellor? I don't know. People have to find that out in their own destiny. I think we just have to go with, you know, what we know and what God is calling us to, and then we know we're on safe ground and we're authorized to operate.
And the little ones
at a time. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've probably got time for one more short thing because I've got another hangout in 4 minutes. But if you've got anything briefly you want to ask or share, then feel free. If not, we can leave it there.
Well, I thank you because I learned lots today.
Okay. Yeah, there is a lot to learn, isn't there? I mean, we're all got L plates on. We're all learners. We're all amateurs in this. And God loves that. He'd rather have us be those who are willing to learn than those who think we know everything and we don't. You know, and the more I know, the more I realize I don't know. You know, and that's just how it is. You know, how could we possibly know everything about God? He's infinite. You know, my finite brain could not contain at this point in time, you know, everything as it is, you know, but things will change, you know, and we will be able to contain more, and we will be able to have the capacity for more as we are conformed into God's eternal image for us, and as he has of us, as we're transformed and conformed into that image. There will be supernatural abilities to do the greater works than we've got right now. So the more transformation, I think the more we will be able to understand and to be able to operate in. And the key is to pursue that with the desires of our heart, to pursue more in relationship, which will release more in everything else, you know, which is great. So anyway, okay, all right. Okay, well, it's been